Alrighty, here we go. Welcome to North Shore Sports Night. On this Monday night, I'm Rick Moore along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. We're back. Been away for a while. A lot of stuff not quite out of the ordinary here at MSO News Sports due to vacations and stuff. Bill Newell not available tonight. But I had vacation last week, and Bill held the fort for us, so we appreciate that. And see what we can handle this week with news and sports and so on. And by the way, I want to thank everybody for the tremendous visiting we've been getting, support we've been getting. We've been getting tremendous amounts of visitors every single day. Haven't got much in the way of email in terms of suggestions, advice, complaints, or whatever. But we are getting a lot of response to the website. And we've been able to talk with many people over the years, and of course during the summer we're having one of the biggest months we've had in terms of news and information and sports and so on that we've ever had. And this is generally a down time in July, so we appreciate it. Thank you, and you know, spread the word, tell people about us. Okay, tonight, we are going to be sort of clearing out the attic and just talking a little sports potpourri. I want to pick the coach's brain, as he's going to be a little bit late, but he'll be here. Obviously, Gloucester Little League is huge, big topic, and Tim has seen the Gloucester Little League, watched them over the weekend, and I'm sure he'll bring the sports report that Nick Kukuru has done. So we'll check that out. And they're going to the States. They're in the Final Four for the state for the right to represent the state down in Williamsport at the Little League World Series. So this is getting serious now, and we'll check. We'll check into that with Tim when Tim gets here. Tonight's guest will include Mike Parker. Now, Mike is the baseball coach, the manager coach, if you will, of the Beverly Rex in the North Shore Baseball League. And they're in the playoffs along with several other teams. And we talked last week with Matt Sullivan a little bit about the league, or 2 weeks ago, I should say, a little bit about the league. Got some information about his team and about the league. Now we're going to get a little more information and some stories from Mike Parker. Obviously, they won't be playing tonight in this rain. So we'll have a little bit more of an opportunity to chat with Mike and not be in a hurry, as he would have had, I believe, an 8 o'clock game tonight. I think they're in the playoffs. So we'll check in on that in just a little while. Also, Gary Larrabee will be on board. Gary, of course, sports historian and golf writer, and covering so much in the state, on the state and local scene, but also, of course, the national scene. And that finish at the British Open, the Open, as they call it, and the wind, the cold, the rain, typical British Open, but not a typical finish, I don't think, by any stretch. So we'll talk with Gary about that, and Steve Krause will be on board to clean things up. Steve, of course, will pick his brain, and I generally let Steve pick whatever topic he wants, but you know, that'll be up to Steve and Tim, I guess, and we'll see where that goes. So that's all upcoming here on North Shore Sports Night on MSO News Sports. The dog barking in the background means that Tim is arriving. So we'll take our first break. When we come back, we'll check in with Mike Parker, who is the coach and manager of the Beverly Rex in the North Shore Baseball League, as well as being the league commissioner. Talk some summer baseball here on North Shore Sports Night. And again, want to get a hold of us, please do so at msonewsports@gmail.com. msonewsports@gmail.com. We'll be back.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're replacing the windows in your home, please see the Anderson 400 Series windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire. The Anderson 400 is attractive, durable, energy efficient, and reasonably priced. Remember, Anderson is the most trusted name in windows. See the Anderson 400 at any of our three locations. That's North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Harrington's Trophy and Awards has been rewarding the North Shore for over 25 years. Hi, I'm Kevin Harrington.
And I am Marty Harrington, and we are known for our local family business, providing custom trophies, plaques, screen printing, embroidery, and much more. We offer a variety of services such as engraving wedding gifts, medals for charity walks, youth sports trophies and uniforms. From the newest style performance wear to your everyday work shirts, we are your one-stop shop. Whether it's a fantasy football, warm-up suits for your team, end-of-the-year banquet gifts, or recognizing excellence, we We pride our business on our exceptional customer service and quality products. Located in Lynn or visit our website at harringtontrophy.com.
People come in, take a seat. You're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. We treat you right, day or night. Satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
All right, we're back on the air. Tim is sliding into his seat right now. And we have on the line Mike Parker. Mike is the baseball commissioner for the North Shore Baseball League, as well as the coach, manager of the Beverly Rex. How you doing, Mike?
I'm fine. How about you?
Oh, we're okay. Nothing like 55 degrees and throwing a log on the fire in the middle of freaking July. But other than that, it doesn't bother me. How about you?
This is what we wish for, to have four games rained out a night here down the end of the season.
You know, in the spring with high school sports, you know, the weather is just brutal in all high school sports. Now, generally speaking, I think you guys probably in the middle of July and August probably usually get some good weather. But what does this do to your schedule?
What's that?
What does the weather do to your schedule? You guys in the playoffs or you're still regular season?
This should have been the final week of regular season, but I'm not sure that it's going to work out for us. We might have to extend another week. A lot of makeup games this week, as you know, trying to cram them in, and it just doesn't look like it's going to work out.
No, I know. Now, all right, so tell me a little bit about what's going on. How many games you got left in the season, and then who makes the playoffs?
Well, we're sitting at three games left. We're in pretty good shape. We lost one tonight, but we're okay. Some teams are still five games away, due to the rainouts, and that's gonna be tough to get in. We might have to extend and start the playoffs midweek next week or later in the week. Top eight teams.
Mm-hmm.
There's 11 teams in the league, and the top eight make it. And it's an interesting year, very, very interesting. This is the first time since I can remember in 10 years that we've had from 1 to 11, anyone can knock off anyone at any time.
Mm-hmm.
It's been crazy.
Yeah, and I'm looking at from like one down to four or five. You're within. You got Kingston and Swampscott have the 4-point lead over Beverly. You guys, and then Peabody's right behind them, and then North Shore is right behind them, along with the Phillies and the Storm. So looks like it. So you've had some good close games. Any game in particular that stands out for you guys?
Kingston's. You know, it's basically the six teams that are right there right now are pretty consistent year in and year out. North Reading's on the rebound. North Reading, they may sneak into the playoffs this year, but they're an up-and-coming team, I think. They've gotten younger.
I'm losing you, Mike. Hello? Hello, Mike? Can't hear you, Mike. Are you still there? All right, we're going to call you back. We're going to call you back. Try calling back, Coach, see what happens there. You know, that happens from time. It ain't our fault. And the server, I think, sometimes on the cell phone end of it. But I said Mike. It is Mike. Mike Parker, who is the commissioner of the North Shore Baseball League. See if this works now. Try it again. Hi, Mike. I can't hear you. I can't hear you, brother.
Yes.
No. Coach. Very low. Hello?
Okay, I'm here.
There we go. There we go. All right, we got you now. Okay, can you hear me now?
I can hear you.
All right, that's good. Well, Mike, when we emailed you, we'll talk about your team a little bit here in a bit, but when you emailed back a week or so ago, you were talking about some of the tradition and some of the things that go on in the North Shore Baseball League. So you want to tell me a little bit more about the league and how it's comprised and maybe a story or two you want to relate?
Well, I mean, the league has been around since the early 1900s. Had its ups and downs like any amateur league. And when we, and when I mean we, the whole board came on board together with myself 5 years ago, and we were all new, and we just had some good ideas and some, the whole league needed to be refreshed. That's the bottom line. And I think we accomplished that, and very proud of what we got accomplished in the 5 years. It's always been, it's gone up between 10 to 13 teams, consistently. So we've always had a fair amount of teams. The league goes as far up as Kingston, New Hampshire. They play out of Havel Stadium, and we go, you know, Saugus, Malden, that area, and all of us in between.
Mm-hmm.
There's a team that plays out of Manchester that plays out of Gloucester High School a lot. Are you still with me?
Oh, yeah, we're here. We're here.
Okay.
We're here.
Okay. You got, you know, Peabody Champions and Swampscott. They've been the staple of the league for the past 20 years or so. But in the past 5 years, we've had five different champions other than those two teams. But
mm-hmm.
they really dominated the league for years mm-hmm. and years.
Sully was telling me a couple weeks ago that you got some serious pitching in that league. How about your team? Who are your stars on the mound?
Well, we do have a good pitching staff. You know, we have Alex Teal, who comes out of Malden, played at Fitchburg State and Worcester State. Nick Colanto played at Wentworth, pitched for Wentworth. Lucas Ilgus, they're all a little bit older. Last year we had Austin Michelle, who's doing just fabulous for the Navigators this year. We've got a young Rocky Pisa, Andrew Dunn out of Danvers.
Oh, did we lose you?
Okay. Brendan Pitley, who pitched for Endicott.
Mm-hmm.
A few years back, he played professionally in the Australian League.
Oh wow!
He's come back home, and he's pitched. So we've got some good pitching. I'll tell you, we played the Phillies last night, and they've underachieved a little bit this year, but they've got a really good pitching staff, and they're a scary team to face in round one. You know, round one's a 3-game series, and to me, that's a scary team I don't want to see in the playoffs.
All right, so how does that line up? Now, when do the playoffs start, and is it by seed? One plays eight and so on?
Correct. The first round is best of three. The second round is best of five, and the finals is a 7-game series.
Mm-hmm.
We were hoping to start next Sunday. I just don't think it's going to happen. I think we're going to end up pushing it back. And if we push it back, I think we're going to push it back to the following weekend just to get it rolling on a weekend.
What's your role, Mike? How did you get to where you are?
I coached the Recs for 5 or 6 years, and then there was going to be a change, and you know, the commissioner was stepping down and everything. So I at that time I thought it was a tough time for an amateur league. We were all losing teams, and it wasn't looking pretty. And I just had some ideas about how to curb it, and luckily enough, we were able to find some new teams to come into the league. You know, the Manchester Marlins, we had the Destiny Bombers, who played 3 or 4 years in the league and just folded up recently, out of Lawrence. We had a Reading team. Saugus, who left the league, has come back now. It's just new reports new to the league. It's just been very lucky for us that we were able to recruit teams and keep things going. But I think we're on the right track.
The rosters look like they're pretty populated. And how many guys do you generally get for a game? Because obviously you can't get everybody to show up for every game. But it looks like you got some.
That's why they're so popular.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, a lot of these college kids coming back, they need to work, because that's their pocket money for when they go back to school. So they really need to work, so they can't always show up.
Mm-hmm.
Coach, I'm looking at some of the names. You got Andrew Olzak from Danvers, who's having quite a season for you.
Yes.
Matt Mello, Ethan Trout. I mean, you've got some Andrew Dunn, Jake Zuli. Who else is down the end?
Dylan Gonzalez, Ethan Trout.
Yeah.
They've all been great, great college players.
Lucas Ilges from Gloucester.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So you've got some names that quite a few of us recognize. Now, I played for the Lynn Jets back in the early 70s when the North Shore League got was out for a couple of years, and then it got resurrected again. I played for 3 years for the Lynn team.
Billy Conigliaro play on that team?
No, but God, Billy is probably 10 years older than I was.
Oh, yeah, right.
In the previous incarnation of the team, he would have been playing up there with, let me think who would have been playing back then, Papagilis, maybe January was on that team, because my dad used to take me down to Berry Park to watch those guys play, and that was some incredible baseball. To watch those guys go at it on a Sunday. So, but yeah. It was always, you know, always populated by, you know, a lot of good guys who had just got through Legion ball and high school and were in college and were still looking to play. And again, extremely, extremely competitive. Jackie Carroll from Lynn Classical pitched on our team.
Jackie Carroll, yeah.
So.
It's still very competitive. I happened to mosey on down to the the Swampscott Sox and the Champions were playing the other night, and I mostly got that because I had some business with one of the coaches, and it was chippy as it's always been chippy, but it was you know, very chippy during the game, but they're great friends after the game.
Oh yeah, you know, and I tell my players, I coached close to Gloucester JV this year, and I've always told my players whenever I've coached, they don't keep score for nothing. You play the game to win, so go out there with the attitude, y'all gonna win today.
Right.
And we get out of high school and go, we don't forget that. You get on the field, you put the uniform on, you put the glove on, you lace up the spikes, you grab the bat, and you're there for a purpose, to play hard.
Right, that's right.
So.
And you know, I don't know, Tim, you guys are going to remember, like, Mike Giardi.
Yep.
He's still playing in this league. And hit a home run that. He hit a home run the other night. He's hit a home run in 20 straight years.
Wow.
And I'm going to guess he's 42, 43 now. And he still goes. He never laces up his cleats. He runs with them wide open. he's the best. I mean, they're short a catcher. They need a catcher. He jumps behind them.
Yeah. Excellent.
But he's such an example for all the younger guys that, you know, this is how the game is to be played no matter how old you are.
Right. The Champions, they got, you know, Mark Shorey plays for them. They've had, you know, quite a lot of guys that played minor league ball. John Gilmet, Lyons. I think he played overseas, I believe. So they've had a lot of guys that had a lot of experience at a different level than us.
Well, Mike, I'm sure you'll get back at it tomorrow. Supposed to be better weather. Anything else you want to mention about the league?
I just want to say we don't want North Shore kids going off to college playing baseball. We don't want them to go anyplace else but this league. So please look at this league hard. If you want to get better, this league will test you.
Sounds good. And listen, Mike, keep us posted, and we'll see where this goes, and maybe we can talk to you during the playoffs.
Sounds good, guys.
Okay, Mike, thanks. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Coach.
Thank you.
That is Mike Parker, who is the commissioner of the North Shore Baseball League and also the manager of the Beverly Rex. And I have perused a couple of the rosters, and some serious talent there.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, some of these guys aren't that far removed from school, and their skills aren't diminished to the point where they don't want to play anymore. But like I say, Lucas Ilges was an outstanding pitcher for Gloucester.
Good
during
kid,
their,
too. Good
during
kid.
A great run.
Yep.
Andrew Olzak is just recently out of Danvers, 2 years out of Danvers, and looking at his numbers, he's hitting a paltry .408. You know, he's 29 for 71, four doubles, two triples, 11 RBIs, you know, so even at the next level, he's still getting it done. And from what I believe, he had a hell of an outstanding freshman year. So,
who was the kid who pitched for Gloucester? Remember in that playoff year when they went to the States and he threw like 200 innings or so? Dylan Mackey.
Dylan Mackey.
I was thinking of Chris Mackey, and it was Dylan, yeah.
Dylan, yeah.
That was unbelievable.
Yeah, they're still trying to sew his arm back on.
Well, I know. And he pitched like 180 pitches, then they moved him into the outfield, and then he came back in and pitched extra innings.
yeah, that was up in Lowell.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that was a game against St. John's Prep, I think it was.
Well, listen, we're going to talk a little sports among between you and me, and then we'll talk with Steve Krause later on.
We're going to talk to
second
Gary?
Half, right? We're going to talk to Gary at 7:30. Can't go too early with Gary because he has his certain routine, and I totally respect that. You know, certain things at certain times. But Gloucester Little League, you saw Gloucester Little League there in the state Final Four, I guess it is?
Yes, it is.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, they start Thursday night. They play Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And
where are those games?
They're at North Reading.
Mm-hmm.
In North Reading, probably right off of 62. My plan is to attend Thursday night's game. I just left a meeting with my fellow JV coaches. No, Mr. Rick.
And where was this meeting, Coach? At an establishment in
a local establishment.
A local establishment.
Yes, Cape Ann Brewery Pub.
And it was a meeting.
It was a meeting.
Uh-huh.
Have I not gone there and had meetings with you?
No, not the Cape Ann Brewery, no.
We have met there?
We met there, let me see.
Played a poor game of trivia.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. Were you're right.
No, I'm not going to embarrass you by telling that story.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, we weren't on our game that night. But,
no.
Okay.
No.
All right. So
I won't embarrass. If you don't say anything more about my meeting at Cape Ann, I won't tell them what question you missed.
Which question? I don't remember.
Don't you remember the question that you should have gotten that you didn't get?
Oh, in math on
yeah, you got
on
the
a
math
parabola,
question
sure.
Wrong.
Yeah.
And what did you teach for 106 years at Gloucester?
Well, they didn't.
What did you teach?
Okay.
Just the
question. Excuse me. Excuse me.
What did you teach?
Excuse me. They didn't phrase it according to
what
the real definition.
What did you teach?
Kids.
You taught children.
I
and
taught
what
kids.
Did you teach the children?
Let's just get on with it.
See,
get
see.
On with it. Oh,
so,
boy, you just love to stab people in the back. You're so nasty.
You were just,
do we ever do that to
I
you?
I called you to let you know I was coming here, and all of a sudden you were fictionalizing, okay? What
okay,
was
so
going on?
Tell me a little bit about
what you guys
have planned.
So I met with Bill Melvin. Was one of my Bill was a volunteer assistant, and Bob Wine and I had a gift for him that we wanted to. For finally, we were able to get all schedules together that we could meet. And we gave him his gift because he was certainly a valuable member of the coaching staff this year. But the Gloucester Little League, those 12-year-olds all stars, I'll tell you, they are the Bash Brothers. Those top four kids in the lineup.
There's a kid who had three home runs the other day.
That was the pitcher Morris.
Yeah.
Morris helped him out quite a bit. He waxed three home runs. Jake Lucido's little brother, Jared. He's hit now, I believe it is 11 home runs in this district playoff tournament. I mean, I was there for the game on Wednesday night. They went down 1-0 in the first inning. He gets up. He's a number three hitter. Opposite field, and there's one thing that Jared Howard, the coach, was talking about in the paper the other day, is how well his team has hit to the opposite field. And Jared just crushed one, line drive. And they say all of his home runs, and the ones that I've seen, have been simply line drives and the 200-foot fences. And he's just crushed. There's no question about these balls getting out of the ballpark.
How does this work? Is this now a Little League team? Is it an all-star team from a league within a city, or is it a team unto itself? How does that work?
No, it's an all-star team from the city.
Okay.
That then... a city league, like Peabody has Peabody South and Peabody West.
Okay.
So Peabody South went because they beat Peabody West.
Now how many leagues does Gloucester have?
Gloucester has one.
Just the one.
So they went into the pool.
So how many teams are in the Gloucester Little League? Five, six, something like that?
I think there's seven or eight.
Okay.
So these were the best players, and I'll tell you they played really well. They played good defense. They didn't have any blowouts. I got to the first night on Wednesday night, and Gloucester was the late game at 7:30.
A lot of extra inning games.
And I get there. It's left to seven. It's the fifth inning between North Andover and Reading, and it's 16-14.
Okay.
And I'm thinking, you got to be kidding
me.
It ends up seven innings. 21-20, North Andover. And Reading scored three runs in the bottom of the seventh to make it final score. And, I mean, kudos to the kids. Neither team gave up. But 21-20, they were just banging the ball.
Yeah.
And so Gloucester went in against North Andover on Friday night, the game I went to, and they were already 2-0. They had beaten Reading, they had beaten Peabody, and now they're playing North Andover. And this is the wacky thing about this playoff system. They beat Peabody 5-3 on home runs. They won their first game against Reading on home runs. They then played North Andover. They won 4-2, two-run home runs. And they played some outstanding defense. They got a.
Anybody play third base for them that could maybe somebody use?
Okay. They all played solid.
Yeah, that's cool.
You know, they all made plays. One outstanding play was Howard in right field. Deep fly ball. He goes back on it, makes the catch. Perfect throw to the cutoff. Perfect throw to Lucido, and they double the kid off second base. And North Andover in the fourth and fifth innings had bases loaded and less than two outs, and Gloucester escaped both times.
Wow. All right, well, we're looking forward to that and see what happens during the week. Good luck to the locals. That sounds terrific.
Yeah.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll check in with Gary Larrabee. This is North Shore Sports Night on this Monday night.
Street, a great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. We treat you right, day or night, satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're replacing the windows in your home, please see the Anderson 400 Series windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire. The Anderson 400 is attractive, durable, energy efficient, and reasonably priced. Remember, Anderson is the most trusted name in windows. See the Anderson 400 at any of our three locations. That's North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, this is the first time we've had Tim and Gary together for a long time. We want to welcome back Gary Larrabee, sports historian and golf writer. And how are you, Gary?
I'm doing wonderful, guys. How are you guys doing tonight?
Did you guys talk golf last week?
Not last week, the week before.
Oh.
The week before. We did talk, we talked up the Senior Open once again. But I'll start the first question, Gary, then we'll go at it. And the British Open, or the Open as I guess it's called, the usual drama, the usual weather, and I'm listening to sports radio today and hearing all kinds of different descriptions and comments about Jordan Spieth. So let's start with you. What's your take on this thing?
Well, what is there to say after he plays the last four holes, I believe, and five under par the last five holes after making one of the worst drives off the tee in the history of the British Open, the European Championship. On that 13th hole, it looked like he may blow another one like he had back in at the Masters in 2015, Tim, right?
Yes, I believe that is. 15? Or maybe 16.
That's right. And he hadn't won a major since, and there were some wonders. I mean, was this guy going to be a two-major wonder? And obviously, he's no longer a two-major wonder. He's got his third major, and he can, obviously, if he wins the PGA, be the youngest player to ever win the golf's Grand Slam. But what can you say? I mean, the greatest finish in the history of majors to play five under the last five holes. I know my fellow I used to remember, Art Wall, played the back nine, I think, in five under to win the Masters back in 1959. But this is obviously something that we haven't seen before, and we'll hopefully see it again. This guy, Jordan Spieth, can play.
You know, I always ask this question when we see these kinds of individuals who've been struggling to come up and win a big one. You know, is this a turning point for him? And what took his caddy so long for him to tell him, basically, hey, suck it up and play golf?
Yeah, they do have quite a relationship. Jordan and Mr. Greller, I believe his name is. And to say the least, they have a great relationship, and it works wonderfully for both of them, since he's now one of the richest caddies in the history of professional golf now that he's won a third major on Spieth's bag. But the bottom line is, guys, that Spieth got over the hump from blowing that Masters, obviously, with this victory. And I think we can all concede that no one seems to create the excitement on the golf course that Jordan Spieth does right now. He's got the looks, the charisma, he's got the wonderful attitude. He is a wonderful young man, quite frankly. We could not have a better face in the world of golf, an American. You know, a lot of folks didn't applaud for him yesterday, if you notice. A lot of folks held back and did not put their hands together and appreciate his magnificent finish. But too bad for them. And great for Jordan, and let's just hope he can do it again at the PGA Championship next month.
Yeah, you know, you certainly, I think the weight of expectations maybe got to him, Gary, after the very early success, and then maybe he, you know, pushed the game a little. He got out of what would be for him the natural rhythm that he normally played with, thinking that he had to, you know, do these exceptional things and play this exceptional golf week in and week out instead of just letting, you know, his game come out and let that drive his scores. He seemed to be trying to, you know, almost overdo it at times, and he played not to lose rather than to win, which I think a lot of young guys who have a lot of success early fall into, and then they never really get back on track.
Well, I think he's played always with I think a little bit of aggression and not necessarily devil may care, but he's got it all together right now. And of course, it's the great mystery of golf, Tim, that we've been talking about for years on this Monday night discussion. That there's no more mysterious game, individual game, in the world than professional golf. We may want to use something like baseball, when you look at how Pablo Sandoval comes over here from San Francisco having two phenomenal years, and then he can't do anything over here in over a three-year span. That's one of the great mysteries, I guess, of all of sport, but there seems to be no more mystery, no greater mystery than you finding golf when a great golfer can shoot 65 one day and 75 the next.
Yeah.
You know, and even the young man who was a grace, who shot, you know, the tournament low and record low 62, and one of my buddies who was working as a volunteer over there was all upset because he, you know, the record that he broke was whose record was it? Cook record, who had the previous low. And he said, you know, this guy is a nondescript golfer, but I'm thinking after's going, but that's the great thing about golf. It's the maybe sometimes the unknown guy stepping up and having the one round of his life that puts him into the record books.
Correct. And sometimes it's the and this guy's no chop liver. He almost won the U.S. Open, if you remember, 2 years ago at Chambers Bay. And he's always been a serious, very well-respected player, especially in the majors. And the fact that he's the first player to ever shoot 62... I think says worlds for him. But I think that's the way golf is, Tim. You just don't know what the next day will bring. And Spieth hasn't shot any 62s, but you know, these guys are getting so much better and better. You know, we're seeing 63 shot now, and what's next? We'll be the first 61 in the majors. It might be at the PGA next month. Who the hell knows?
Hey, Gary, final comment for me on the Open or comment type question. I noticed second place, the purse for second place, and my eyes almost popped out of my head. $1 million for finishing second. Is that right?
Yeah, I believe this year that whatever purse increased at the Masters, and I think the USGA followed suit. And that such is the wonderful situation that major professional golf is in, where the sponsors are still there, the fans are still there, to keep increasing these purses, and it's just a wonderful life, guys. If you have your game, and you can get out there and get lucky once in a while for four rounds, one round, it can set you up for life.
All right, Gary, I need to go back to your column last week, and it was your final thought on the Senior Open was the equipment that the players were using that was allowing them to hit 340-plus yard drives and 220-yard six irons, that the equipment seems to be giving these players such an edge over some of these courses. And these are the seniors. These are the guys 50 and older who are driving the balls these lengths.
And they're overpowering all the courses. They're overpowering the British Open course, Royal Birkdale, over the weekend. You saw what they were hitting for second shots, irons for second shots on the 645-yard hole at Erin Hills during the U.S. Open.
Yeah.
The USGA and the Royal and Ancient never got control of the increased technology and with not just the equipment but also the golf balls, and it's gone way out of control. I don't know where it's going to lead from here, but unless they do something serious about it, it's going to be more and more laughable out there. Because these guys are in such great shape, they can just pound it and pound it. And I thought you were going to ask me about the long putters. I made a comment in my column about
that.
McCarron and Langer were being asked and scrutinized a little bit for supposedly resting their putter
right
on their chest, which is not legal. But after careful review of video and stuff by the USGA and the Royal and Ancient, neither one of them is being answered for that. Being called to answer for that.
Are they managing to slip a piece of paper between the top of the putter and the shirt? You know, does that qualify?
Yeah, it's a close call. What if your sweater or your golf shirt hangs down away from your chest, and if it touches the shirt, is that legal? Sure, it's legal. It's not touching your body.
Right.
But they're going to get into that some more. They should, like I said in my column, they should just shorten the putters, not allow them to use these long shafted putters, and they wouldn't have the problem at all.
Now, in terms of dealing with the level of technology, do you, and it'd be tougher, lengthen the holes, or do you redesign the holes so that you don't have these long straightaways where you can pound the ball 350, nearly 400 yards, so where they have to play more layup golf, where they have to hit to a landing area, you know, maybe 300 yards out, and then you're gonna dogleg left or right, and it's a bit more testing.
Well, I think only Augusta National has responded to this equipment issue, because they have obviously and without almost blatantly extended their golf course by several hundred more additional yards to try to combat what Tiger Woods was doing, and the distance issue is still just, I don't think, Tim, that the traditional great golf courses, with the exception of Augusta National, will play into the hands. I think there's going to be, at some point, there's going to have to be some kind of a consensus by the great championship golf courses in the world, like St. Andrews and others, that they have to put pull back the reins on the distance that these irons and drivers are sending these atomic golf balls, whatever you want to call them. But when that time will come, we don't know, because at this point, the equipment manufacturers seem to have the upper hand.
All right, let's shift from local at Salem to other local golf, Gary.
Well, right now we're keeping an eye on a local boy who's out on the web.com tour. Rob Oppenheim's had three pretty good weeks in a row on the web.com tour. He's making a run for the top 25, which will get his card back to play on the PGA Tour starting in the fall. So we've seen three pretty solid weeks in a row by Rob. One was a second place finish. Locally, we've been watching the Turner brothers from Gloucester and Bass Rocks. Mark and James had a problem with his shoulder a few weeks ago and had to withdraw from the Mass Amateur. Younger brother Mark got to the round of 16. This past week we saw Mark finish tied for sixth at the New England Amateur, where his brother James was the defending champion. James still having obviously issues with his shoulder. He shot an even score of 300, which was, you know, many, many strokes behind the new champion. So I think we're keeping an eye on the Turner brothers right now. Again, we got some more big tournaments coming up, like the We Met Memorial. Beyond that, it's fairly quiet until we get into August, I think, guys, which is right around the corner. We see the New England PGA Championship coming up, and we'll see if any of our local pros can make some headlines at that annual championship.
Sounds good, Gary. What do you got coming up in the column this week?
We're going to talk about one of the better-known families on the North Shore who's been winning tournaments of all kinds, four balls, club championships, women's state tournaments, a father and his son and his daughter. They've had an amazing tradition, really, or history of winning a lot of tournaments for their family and for their clubs, and I think it's a unique look at, boy, when golf gets into a family as deeply as this family, it's a fascinating story. I hope my readers will enjoy it.
Absolutely.
And there was a recent mother-son combination that won either state or national title. It was in the paper this last week?
No.
Yes. I can see them in the. I can see the picture, but I don't have.
All right. Well, while you think of that, Gary, I don't know if we want to do it next time or sometime before summer's out. I'd like to talk to you about some of the books that you've written, and maybe a little bit about how you compile them and what your favorite thing might be about a couple of them.
Sure. There's no secret to it, Rick. But I'll be happy to provide the formula and. Be happy to share some of those thoughts with you.
I'd love that. We'll do that. Okay, Gary, we'll see you next week.
Have a great week, guys.
Thank you, Gary.
See you, Gary.
Gary Larrabee, golf writer, sports historian. He's written a number of books, including the one on Babe Didrikson Zaharias, okay, which was an amazing read. And, Gary, I love reading. You know, I'll tell you what.
I still have your copy of that.
There are, well, maybe I'll get it back someday.
Maybe.
There are, Some great writers right now in the area, sports writers. But I must say that not that long ago, the Salem News, among others, but the Salem News in particular, was when they had a big budget, they had a big staff, and every one of those guys, you'd read about local sports, and it was like reading Lee Montville and Peter Gammons, just great stuff. And Gary is a part of that legacy, I think. And this guy, and everybody's still writing, too. I don't know where Grenier is, but he's been around.
He may be, you know, standing underneath Touchdown Jesus.
Yeah, it could be. Well, I hope he brings some luck back to them, because they have been awful. And their coaching staff has been awful. And I don't usually say that, but they let things get out of hand. Behavior-wise, and
that's not cool. That's surprising for Notre Dame.
That's not cool at all. And
it's what happens when you let standards down and you go all out for winning, that you sell out your values. And we've seen it with professional teams as well, is you take flyers on individuals who may not meet the standard that you uphold to, but that you believe they possess skills that can come and help you win games. And oftentimes, while they will help you win some games, there's that other side that you have to deal with, and oftentimes that is more detrimental than a positive effect. And that's unfortunate.
We will take a break. Come back with Steve Krause. It's open season between you and Steve. Whatever you guys want to talk about, we'll be back.
The Gloucester House Restaurant at historic Seven Seas Wharf, 63 Rogers Street, Gloucester. This is owner Lenny Linquata.
We provide service and product better than anybody else. It comes directly from our boats right to your plate. We have fishermen that work great for us. We are wholesalers that we buy what we want to serve to our customers, and we put the rest of it right out in the market.
The Gloucester House Restaurant. Visit thegloucesterhouse.com.
This is the freshest seafood you can get from our boats to your plate.
The Institution for Savings has always believed in giving back to our communities because our communities are such great places to live and work. Last year alone, we donated and pledged more than $3.9 million to local nonprofits, including local hospitals, schools, food pantries, art organizations, and more. Named one of Boston Business Journal's top philanthropic companies, we are proud to be your local hometown bank. InstitutionForSavings.com. Member FDIC, DIF, Equal Housing Lender.
Many aspects of estate planning are interrelated, and you can turn to attorney Bob Madruga for full-service estate planning to help you develop a comprehensive plan in providing for your future. Bob will work with you through the years to adapt your plan as needed, and he can assist you with managing wills, trust, probate, and taxes. Visit the law offices of Robert J. Madruga at 128 Main Street, Gloucester, or call today for an appointment at 978-283-6883. All right, we're back on this Monday night with Steve Krause, the sports editor of the Daily Item. Hi, Steve.
How you doing, guys?
Well,
I think we're all right. Just talking off the air here, a little bit cool tonight, which is rather strange. Got back to my house today, and it was 59 degrees in the house on July 24. That's weird.
Yeah, we've had a couple of days like that in the summertime. The weather's either been very hot or very cold.
Yeah.
It hasn't really been a... Weather-wise, it hasn't been the most enjoyable summer I've ever had, but, you know, not much you can do about it, right?
We got a way to go. Now, Steve, there's so much going on in terms of the big sports. You got Little League, obviously, which is huge. Tim was just talking about Gloucester Little League. But then you've got the Red Sox, who are at least entertaining this summer, and you got Patriots summer camp opening up, and then you got the Celtics, who have made some moves. I'm going to let you and Tim decide where you want to go.
Well, I want to go talk about this kid, Zach Morris, from the Gloucester Little League. Holy God. This kid, I've been to four Little League games this year, which is four more than I went to last year. You know, and this kid, he pitched and he shut them out, the PBD out for four innings. He got up three times, he hit three balls over the fence. Knocked in seven runs out of the 10 they scored. I mean, gee whiz, I don't know what the kid's going to do in the rest of his athletic life that's going to equal that game. And he's only 12. So I don't know whether to be really happy for the kid or feel kind of sad for him that his athletic zenith came at age 12. You know what I mean?
Well, the top four of that batting order for Gloucester has been murderers row for the teams in this sectional. Lucido, their number three hitter, I know he has 11 home runs. He could possibly have 12.
Well, he hit one Saturday, so maybe that's the 12.
Okay, because I saw him on Wednesday night briefly with the game that started at 9 o'clock, and he tied the score with an off-field shot over the straightaway right field fence into the bleacher section there. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it was just scalded. And in talking to Jared Hard with the Gloucester coach, the one thing that he's been most pleased with his team, because they have spent time working on it, was hitting, going to the opposite field. But these guys aren't going opposite field for hits. They're going opposite field for distance.
Well, this one of the three home runs that Morris hit was so far to left field, the only question was whether it was going to stay fair. But this thing was a monster shot. It went beyond the bleachers, behind the bleachers.
Wow.
You know, and none of the four home runs that Gloucester hit, because Lucido hit one and the other kid hit three, none of the four home runs that Gloucester hit in that game were cheapies. I mean, they were all tagged.
Yeah.
And that's unbelievable. I've never seen anything like that in all my years of playing it and watching it. I have never seen that. And I've seen some good athletes come out of Little League and go on to have good careers in general. But this kid here, that was amazing. I mean, he's a big kid. You know, he's got a lot to put behind those swings.
Yeah.
But I mean, good Lord. I mean, to have the hand-to-eye coordination, you know, and the kid from Peabody wasn't throwing air balls up there. He was chucking them, you know. He's one of their main pitchers, Carson Brown. So, you know, I just thought it was a, for that level of play, it was just, God love the kid. How can you not be but happy for a kid who has a game like that? I mean, you know, that's just tremendous.
Gloucester's secret to success in the sectional, Steve, was they hit five home runs on Saturday to beat Peabody. Mm-hmm. They hit two home runs Friday night to beat North Andover. Those were all counted for all four runs. They had two-run homers.
Mm-hmm.
Against Peabody, they hit a grand slam, and I think that was Morris who hit that. For the winning runs,
mm-hmm.
They hit either two or three in the first game that they played. It was like every game they won was because they went long ball on people.
This reminds me a little, and I don't want to put any pressure on them, but this reminds me a little bit of that Saugus American League team that went to the World Series in 2003. They could mash too, you know. They had four or five kids on that team, all of them very capable of hitting the ball out of the park. But, you know, the only cautionary tale to this, of course, is the higher up you go, you know, you're going to meet your own level at some point.
Exactly.
You know, but I'll tell you what, it looks to me like this team's got the legs to win the state championship. Now, what happens after you win the state championship? I kind of think it's gravy. I think just winning a state championship in Little League is pretty cool, you know?
Sure. But, you know, you win one, you want it, you have that thirst to win the next one. And again, it's no shame having to go to Williamsport and to lose, because they can't take anything away that you've already accomplished, certainly. You know, I look down the road, if all these young guys continue to improve the ball playing skills, and they all managed to stay home for their high school. Gloucester could have a pretty fair team over the next.
Yeah, they're all going to go to the prep.
Yeah, the prep, Fenwick, Rockport, yeah. Manchester Essex. Yeah, well,
Steve will be recruiting them for the prep. Yeah.
Well, I know Lucina.
Get that Morris kid into the prep.
There you go.
But Danny Letach heard all about him.
I know.
And he's from Peabody.
I know Jared Lucina will be at Gloucester High School because his brother's there now, and he's a tremendous little ball player.
Yeah.
You know, guys, you know, Steve, not that I want to jump the shark, but this puts it reminds me of the article that's been in the Globe this weekend about Bobby Orr. And it's funny, the article was talking about the two guys that the Bruins scouts went to see who were older teenagers, and they end up signing Bobby Orr.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't tell, I still haven't read a description on the game that Orr played, what opened their eyes. But I do remember, it's funny, 50 years have gone by, or 40, 30 years, whatever it is. And I remember when they signed him, not when they signed him, but when he came up to the Bruins, that it was announced that they had signed this kid at 12 years old. And the fact that he had those skills then and kept improving, that's got to be once, I don't know, I've never heard of anything like that before.
Yeah, the team, the two kids I went to see were playing on the opposite.
Right,
the
opposition
they won. Team, and they won in an overtime goal.
Right.
And Orr, of course, was the star when they met for a dinner afterwards.
Right.
And Orr walked into the restaurant, and all the kids from the other team stood up and applauded him. I mean, that's how much respect they had for this young 12-year-old kid who said that just simply dominated the ice with his puck handling skills and his skating skills. They said everybody knew he was the best player on the ice.
Yeah. I mean, it makes you wonder sometimes about my cousin, who was quite a bit older than me. He saw Harry Aganis play, and he said that was Aganis when Aganis was like 13, 14 years old. He was a man among boys,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that had to be what Orr was like. And then you think of all of the progress he made and how he just took the National Hockey League apart, and you know what a
well. You know,
all I think of when I think of Orr is what a sin.
Yeah,
that his career was cut short by knee injuries.
Oh yeah,
and he got screwed by Wolf. That too.
No, Allen Eagleson.
Eagleson.
It was the Bruins scout who saw him basically camped out in the town hotel
yeah.
and went to his parents' house every day. And he had actually signed with the Canadians, but the Bruins had the territorial rights to him.
Yeah.
And so they had to renege on the Canadian. Can you see if he had been a Canadian?
Oh, my God. Oh.
I'd have hated him. I wouldn't have been mad at, you know?
No. Well, the thing is,
to be a Montreal Canadian is to be hated.
That's
by
right.
Me, so.
Automatic. And his legacy has just grown since then with the wonderful work that he's done as well. He's a great...
One of the world's great guys.
Yeah.
Now, let's segue from one of the world's great guys
to David Price.
To one of the,
am I right?
You read my mind. One of the world's biggest jerks. The only thing I have to say about that is I'm sure that, you know, this is a pressure town, you know, and I was just watching the baseball MLB channel before you called, and Jim Thome's on there, who's talking about the fact that there are really three places, Boston, New York, and Philly, that, you know, you have this situation with you have so much media and so much competition and so much rancor, you know, that you just have to learn to put up with it. But so if Price got upset and said something to Eckersley, well, you know, we all have our days. We all have our good days and our bad days. And maybe this was just an exceptionally bad day for him. What concerns me about this is that nobody else on the team thought enough to say, hey, David, you know, this guy's in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
You know,
and he was ambushed, too. He got ambushed, according to Shaughnessy's story.
Not only is he in the Hall of Fame, but he, other than Ralph Branca, what other home run, other than Ralph Branca's, had as much gut emotional impact as Kirk Gibson's in that World Series game?
Oh, yeah.
Who threw the pitch?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and he was as accountable could be after that game. He answered every question, you know, I'm sure he loved doing it, but he answered every question, and, you know, having followed him through his career and watched his transition from his younger Dennis Eckersley to his older Dennis Eckersley, I mean, this guy's kind of a model for how you behave, you know?
Yep.
And, you know, that nobody on the team, you know, thought to pull him aside and say, oh, come on, would you please? This is Dennis F. Eckersley here.
Yep.
You know, it's not some idiot that just got on the air yesterday. You know, show a little respect. And, you know, they talk about what they miss with Ortiz not being there in terms of his offense, but they miss that part of it, too. They don't have an adult in the room, apparently.
That's a good point, and they're going to need one because it's getting on. They're getting into the dog days coming up here pretty soon.
Right, and that includes the manager, by the way.
Yes, I agree with you. Big disappointment.
It is, very.
Big disappointment, especially where he's a pitcher's man.
Well, you know, now the Nesson media will get on the plane first before the team.
Yeah, they got to change the whole way they do things to avoid that. Rather
Come
than just
on.
Pull the guy aside and say, don't ever do that again.
Right,
yeah,
right.
And that's all it would take. Steve, we got to get going. It's been a pleasure.
Always.
And we'll talk to you very soon and keep in touch and all that stuff.
All right.
Okay, Steve.
See you guys.
Thank
all
you.
Right, my friend. Take care.
Nice talking with you, Steve. Steve Krause, who is the sports editor of the Daily Item, itemlive.com. And, yeah, that's a gross disappointment. And Eckersley... You know, you listen to Eckersley, and I got to tell you, I'm very critical of announcers. Who, me? Yes, I'm very critical. I love certain announcers, don't love other announcers for whatever reasons, you know, that are selfish on my part. But I think Eckersley is one of the best I've ever seen on television. I think he is excellent.
I agree to a point. I just get tired of all the little nicknames and side names that he has for things that happen in the game, and I'm like, you know, stop! It just gets to me after.
But
a
that's
while.
But that's his
Jeez,
jargon.
I don't mind. Yeah,
no, it's his jargon. He's not making that stuff up. That's just how he was.
It's
how he was.
God, it's
other guys have that. You know, Remy has his. Remy's got his little favorite terms and stuff, and I don't think Remy's that good.
Oh, I love Remy.
I don't think he's very insightful.
I love Remy. Oh, I think so.
So there you go. That's what makes it so great.
I think so.
That's what makes it so great.
So,
all right,
I'll
well,
just ambush you in the hallway as you try to leave the room.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I'm telling you. It's just disappointing because you...
You know, the manager's got no guts, and you've seen that since the day he's been the manager. He talks around every situation.
Well, you heard the story in Shaughnessy's book. It was I heard it today on when what's his name Manny knocked over the equipment guy and he was an old timer. Francona apparently he didn't say it then, but apparently he told Shaughnessy that Francona went up to Manny and confronted him and put his face in Manny's face and yelled at him and all the while, and of course Francona's saying, I hope he doesn't hit me. Because, you know, Manny's a big boy. But apparently, Francona did take on him. He took him on one-on-one and said, you know, don't do that. That you can't do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's, you know, there are managers with bees and managers without bees.
Wouldn't it happen with Dick Williams?
Wouldn't that have been
behind the bench? Or Claude Julien, for that matter. I love Claude.
Yeah, can you see Dick Williams seeing that happen? Oh, my God. He'd have physically taken Price by the collar, by the belt, and personally thrown him off the plane.
Oh, man. And you know, the Eck is...
The X town is like it is.
Well, but he's also he's got the chops, as they say. He's got he's got the credentials, man. He knows what he's talking about.
He definitely has that, and you know.
And Price, he's not a personal attack. He talks about the performance at that particular moment.
He's talking about the quality of the performance of the player.
Of the play, you know, of the play, and the player behind it. Sure.
You know, you're responsible for what you do out on the field.
That's right.
So own up to it. Take possession of it. And so I could say I've got to be better.
And here's the difference with me. I get upset when I hear people who sit behind the microphones, like I'm doing right now, and criticize these guys, and they don't go into the clubhouse. They're not day-to-day reporters, but they criticize from afar. And there's one pair of announcers on Boston Radio who use the term sucks. He sucks! He sucks! Well, you know, Eckersley can say that because he's done it, he's been there. But I don't want to hear these guys say it, and I don't want to say it.
Well, they've never been on a ball field, and if they were, they were the last kid picked.
Well,
you know?
Yeah, you're looking at one of them. Whatever. Okay. Thanks for being here, Coach. It's been fun.
Glad I could make it.
I'm glad I
surprise Gary every time he hears my voice.
I'm glad you could make it from that meeting.
Hey, it was time to again, I knew I had to be here, so okay. We met early enough.
Very good. All right. Email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. I'm Rick Moore. That's Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. The voice of the North Shore, Bill Newell, is off tonight. We'll see you next week.